a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you. Folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Brian, you shovel snow?
I do.
You do?
Yes.
You shovel snow by hand or you got a snowblower?
By hand.
By hand? What are you doing, man? You're this.
Come on.
I mean, we have modern technology now, man. You don't have to.
I understand this is a bullion read, so I would agree with you.
You don't have to do that manual labor thing.
I feel shame about my manual labor.
Not when you can take advantage of the huge snowblower sale. Out of Bullion Sales and Service, great deals on Honda and Simplicity snowblowers. Go to WeKnowTractors.com and scroll down to the featured and clearance equipment. These won't last long. Mail-in rebates for Simplicity have been extended through the month of December. Combine those with discount pricing for an even better deal. You can save $25 on single-stage snow throwers. So if you know those light dustings and you want to get out right out there and knock it out, you can do that. $50 off two-stage snowblowers from Simplicity. If you want to move that big snow, again, check out clearance and featured equipment on Bullion Sales website. It's WeKnowTractors.com. Again, WeKnowTractors.com. They're located at 8530 North Territorial Road in Dexter. Again, it's 8530 North Territorial Road in Dexter, and their phone number is 734-426-8527. Brian Cook, how you doing this morning, man?
Good. The guy across from me does have a snowblower, and I feel jealous of him.
There you go.
So,
hey, man, it makes life easier. And I know you, all the hours you spend poring over game film and, you know, writing on MGO blog, time is very precious. And then you got to have family time, too. Time is precious, Brian. Time is precious. Ed knows this. Ed brought his kids in with him because time is so precious, right? Isn't that right, Ed?
That's exactly why.
Or because it's a snow day.
That, too. That too.
Apologize for being late.
Oh, he did bring his kids. I was like, where are his kids?
Yeah, I wasn't just making that up. Ed Fang for the Power Rank. How you doing this morning?
I'm great. Oh, it was awesome listening to Rich. You left me a copy of the book, man. I'm excited to dig into this.
Yeah, man.
It was awesome getting Red Light District in the car with my kids there. Man, that was
right.
That was an amazing car segment.
Yeah, it was a little bit different.
My older one was like, why are you laughing, Dad? I was like, I can't really explain.
Right? Right, yeah.
Not right now.
So, Red Light District is simple. It's where there's a lot of times you have to stop because it didn't turn green yet.
Exactly. Smoking like a true dad over there, Mr. Wide Drop. Craig Ross on the phone from Hawaii. Craig, how you doing this morning?
Yeah, how you doing? I've committed myself to shoveling 100% of the snow in our condo. And that's a big condo unit. I'm shoveling it all.
Craig, just so you know, not only was Rich upset that he missed seeing Ed, but he was really upset missing you because he wanted to get a copy of the Unified Theory signed.
Well, when I'm back in town.
Just go to Literati. You
know, just swap
out the books, an unsigned copy, and they won't know the difference.
Right. And he can call me whenever he wants. I'll be glad to talk to Rich. Sounds like a great, interesting guy.
All right. So guys, since we last spoke, the Shea Patterson news has become official. So I know we dove in this pretty deeply already, but now that he's in the fold, your thoughts on...
People get so mad at me when I have my thoughts on this, though.
Why do they get mad at you?
Because I watched his film. Like, I watched most of his starts for Ole Miss, and he looks like Tate Forcier. And people are like, you suck, I hate you! And I'm like, but Tate Forcier was pretty good, like, for a young quarterback. He was. Huh. If you remember that Notre Dame game, you remember he was pretty good.
Yeah, I do remember that Notre Dame game.
He came off the bench in that Illinois game, and that was 65-67. And Michigan had the 67, thanks to one Tate Forcier. And if he had his head on straight and managed to stay in school, I think we would remember him differently. But that's who he is to me. You know, a scrambler, a playmaker, a guy who's a little bit erratic with his accuracy. A lot of potential that Harbaugh can refine. But, you know, I watched his film, and he didn't seem like a five-star to me. And, like, he seems like a top 200 kind of guy, but he doesn't seem like a – you know, a Davis Mills, a 6'5" flamethrower of a man, just, you know, walking
so,
in.
What do you think
of Baker Mayfield physically?
Well, Baker Mayfield is, you can't compare a guy to Baker Mayfield. Like, because Baker Mayfield is some sort of weird football genius like Drew Brees. Has there been a Drew Brees since Drew Brees? No, sir.
No.
So, maybe Shea Patterson can be, a Shea Patterson where it's like, has anyone been like Shea Patterson? No, sir. But I don't think that, Brandon Peters is out of this by any means.
Oh, no. See, now,
But that's what everybody's talking about. They're like, Peters might as well jump off a cliff now. That's not happening.
We've been pushing back on that, too.
Yeah.
We've been pushing back on that here as well, because even if you think that Shea Patterson is really, really talented, and I do. I mean, having watched him live, his escapability, his ability to throw on the run, I think that he's more gifted athletically than Tate. But
hey man, I still remember that guy's jock on the field from.
And Tate was.
I will ride for Tate Forcier. Nobody else like.
That's him. Not saying that Tate is a bad athlete. I just think that Shea is more gifted. He came in, measured in at close to 6'2", 209 pounds.
Close to 6'2".
So
not 6'2".
He's 6'2". 6'2" on a good day,
Height and arm
with some really puppy socks on.
Okay.
But about 209 pounds, and he can move. He can throw on a quick release. I think he has a good arm. He doesn't have a Brandon Peters arm. But this is the part that I want you guys to quantify.
Yeah.
So for fans, because I had this on the MichiganInsider.com. I said, look, you cannot push a guy to the side who has the kind of physical tools that Brandon Peters has. He has the size. He has the far hash, deep out arm. I mean, he can make all the throws, and he has some escapability as well. And he has a 2-year head start in the system. So guys, well, what is that? What does that mean? He could just come in and learn the system. Do you understand how different what he was doing is from what he will be doing? Can you quantify the difference in concept, the difference in philosophy offensively that he'll be stepping into compared to what he came from?
Sure. I mean, Ole Miss ran a full-on spread, no under center snaps. They had a ton of wide receiver screens because their offensive line couldn't block really well. And his their passing system was pretty Neolithic. So there were a lot of plays where Shea Patterson was faced with, okay, this guy's running a fade route and there's a guy directly over the top of him. I should not throw this ball, but I have no other options because this is all we're doing. So I have to throw this bad idea fade. I threw the bad idea fade. It didn't work out. So there's a lot of plays on his film that are incompletions that I don't think are really on him, but on the fact that, Hugh Freeze gets fired. They replace him with a Sonic manager. That dude is a Sonic manager. Matt Luke literally manages a Sonic somewhere in the deep south right now. And they have like this Longo guy who's like their quarterback's coach who is pretty much a nobody. So I think that there's a lot of potential there. But, looking at that guy in his second year, he didn't burst off the film as like, okay, this guy's obviously going to be the starter. He's obviously going to be an All-American.
Where he doesn't make us a national title contender, said.
The other thing is, I haven't gone over this in detail yet, so I will do this over the offseason where I'll break down his film and see what I think more comprehensively.
Yeah.
But Pro Football Focus had him as the third-best quarterback in the SEC last year. And if that's Michigan's floor at quarterback next year, hell yeah.
Yeah. I have a couple thoughts about Patterson because I looked at tape also, and a couple things. One, it doesn't seem to me that he's a priori a better quarterback than Peters either. I mean, I think that's still something to be determined. But also, McCaffrey won an award at the banquet as the best scout team player for Michigan this year. So I wouldn't want to put McCaffrey out of this race yet either. We really haven't seen him. We don't know. The thing that bothers me about Patterson is one of the things Brian mentioned is he played strictly out of shotgun, 100% out of shotgun in a sort of pistolish kind of offense. And I don't know how this translates into the Michigan mostly under the center offense. And so it isn't clear to me how this race plays out. I agree with Brian. I think it's completely unclear, and I don't want to throw McCaffrey out of the race either because we just haven't seen it.
Well, you know, yeah. Thing with McCaffrey, his deficit isn't just experience. His deficit has been physical. You know, and we had Scott Turner on talking about it that he needs to build his body. In order to get to the point that they need him to be. And he could very well do that in the offseason. So you certainly can't write him off. He will be in the mix, but this is likely. This is very likely a battle between Brandon and Shay. And I guess the other piece that you guys, you didn't touch on specifically, but it's implied in saying he's coming from a spread. Say, man, this offense – he has a lot more responsibility. I mean, those checks that he gets from the sideline, that's him. He's doing that now at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and he's going to have a much more complicated passing offense to deal with. I can't overstate like how rudimentary the Ole Miss offense was. It was go around, make some plays, run some screens, throw some fades, the end. so it's going to be a different world. I'm sure he's got the capacity to do that. I mean, this is a guy whose brother was a quarterback at Duquesne, mm-hmm. And has been a coach at LSU in Arizona and now Ole Miss. So like he comes from a family that knows all about quarterbacking and has done a bunch of it. So like I'm sure taking a snap from under center is not going to be a huge problem. I mean, Brandon Peters had the same problem when he came here, where he's coming from a spread offense because all high schools run spread offenses now. So It's Michigan's going to have this where they're going to bring in a bunch of quarterbacks and it's going to be like, well, can you take a snap from our center? And the answer for all of them not named Ryan Mallett is going to be yes. But I think that adapting to a different offense is going to be something that maybe he gets it immediately. I mean, I'm not saying that he can't, but, Brandon Peters does have a head start, and he's got a bowl game to impress it.
Yeah, I personally think arm strength and height are the two most overrated aspects of a quarterback, so none of that kind of turns me off of this guy at all. We also know that 5 stars are more likely to succeed than 4 stars, and 4 stars are more likely to succeed than 3 stars, so I think that's another thing working in Patterson's favor. And I really like that the guy came and visited on a cold, snowy weekend in Ann Arbor and immediately was like, I'm coming.
He's from Toledo. He's from Toledo. So that wasn't going to be the hindrance for him, the weather. For him, I think it was just a matter of making sure that the fit was what he thought it was going to be. And it was. I mean, that decision was virtually, I mean.
Well, and he can't be afraid of competition either, right?
No, yeah.
They're not handing him this job on a platter.
I mean, there were other... There are other paths that would have been less encumbered for sure. You look at a UCLA. I mean, sure, you got Dorian Thompson Robinson coming in, but
a true freshman though.
But he's a true freshman, right? Yeah. So, man, they were blowing up the phones like, come on, give us a shot.
Yeah.
And the message back was, hey, if he comes back from Michigan. And he doesn't go to Michigan, then we'll talk to all these other teams. Otherwise, he's going to Michigan. So,
good for
there
him.
You go. There you go. It is 9:22 on a Thursday morning. We got to get to a break. Phone lines are open at 734-998-1050. When we come back on the other side, a couple of things to touch on. So, you guys watch a ton of film, a ton of Michigan film. And I'm curious, did you notice during the season where did it look to you like Michigan was getting pushed around? Because, Jim, he just made a very clear statement that, hey, we have got to get stronger. He made that point after the Ohio State game. And I wanted to know if you guys saw that over the course of the season. Did it become more and more evident to you? And then is the Michigan basketball team, are they playing defense? Is it the opponent or are they playing defense? And I ask you that question on the other side as well here. On the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, news broke as we were ending our show yesterday that Michigan strength and conditioning coach Kevin Tolbert will not be retained as the S&C guy here for the Michigan football program. I did learn after the fact that, there will be an opportunity for him to potentially stay on with the program or maybe go somewhere else in the athletic department. So clearly a lot of respect for KT, but Jim – said after the Ohio State game, we need to get stronger. And he said, you know, I guess in his speech, I didn't count how many times he said we need to get stronger. And clearly with this change, he is saying we need to get stronger. I'm curious if you guys had noted, if you guys had seen in games where you felt like, you know, they were just getting pushed around, where they just weren't strong enough. Was there a discernible difference between last year and this year? Is it a cumulative thing? Have you seen it growing as an issue over the years? Just your thoughts.
Well,
go ahead, Craig.
Go ahead. Well, I know I didn't notice it. And if we weren't strong enough, was our defensive line strong enough? Were they getting worked out by the same weight coach and weight training system? Seemed like our defensive line was pretty damn strong, and I didn't see a defensive line all year that looked, quote, stronger. I mean, I thought perhaps, if anything, we weren't quick enough on the offensive line and at times slower in making decisions. Harbaugh's there. He knows. He's the football coach, and I assume there's something to it, but I don't see it. I mean, what do you think? What do you guys
think? Well, I mean, I think the defensive line had a terrible game against Penn State, but otherwise was pretty good. I think, you know, I mean, if you want to talk about pure strength, even on the offensive line, which we've been very critical about, they had some good run blocking games in the middle of the season. I mean, nothing stands out to me like, oh my gosh, this team needs a new strength and conditioning coach. But, I mean, if that's where Harbaugh wants to go, I'm sure he's got a good reason for it.
No, I mean, if there is a reason to get a new strength and conditioning coach, to me, it's usually because you have a spate of, like, soft tissue injuries. And Michigan hasn't really had that happen. They had,
good point.
You know, Drake Harris had some hamstring issues, but he's pretty much an outlier. So is the team relatively healthy? Yes. So that's probably good enough as far as S&C goes. You know, if anything, I feel like Michigan's problem is they weren't, like, trim enough, especially for what Greg Fry wants to do. I mean, you got Juwan Bushel-Beatty, who can't really move. You have Mike Onwenu, who gets replaced by Rundon early in the season because it's too hot and he doesn't have the, you know, endurance to go the whole game. And, you know, he gets replaced by Ruiz late. So I feel like maybe they need a different approach where they slim down a little bit more, get a little bit more athletic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, strength didn't seem to be an issue.
Yeah, see, I this is one of those things that, you know, we can talk position coaches and that kind of thing, but I just total deference for me when it comes to S&C.
No,
what
you need, you need is two different lifters on this round table, and none of us lift.
Wait, what are you talking about, Brian?
And then the two different lifters, doesn't matter who you bring up, they will disagree about whether he's a genius or an idiot.
Yeah,
remember when Gittleson was here, that there was all this hoo-ha. I mean, they broke in, you know, the supposed lift or the lifters and the supposed experts broke into camps. I mean, there were the pro-Gittleson people and the anti-Gittleson people, and you got a lot of the same things with Mike Barwis. There's always going to be these differences of opinion, and I don't know how we resolve.
Yeah, is one better than the other, or do they both seem to work? Are there new strategies and philosophies, or do analytics play into it more now?
Yeah, I mean, people are trying to. So, I know Charlie Batch has started a company trying to do analytics on personal fitness and training and stuff like that. So, yeah, us numbers guys are slowly creeping in there too. But I don't know. I mean, I just feel like strength is a combination of kind of your raw strength and then technique, right? I mean, it's kind of hard to disentangle those. I mean, I don't know if the Stanford guys are the strongest, but I feel like those guys play with a lot of leverage, even if they're up against guys that are quote unquote stronger than them. So I don't really know how to disentangle those two things.
My takeaway from the Ohio State game is not Michigan needs to get stronger. It's Michigan needs to be able to throw the ball 5 yards downfield to a wide open guy.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
So
any news on who's going to replace him?
Well, I know that last time they made a big run at Shannon Turley.
Yes, that's what I want to hear.
Shannon Turley.
But he turned him down.
Not initially, he didn't.
Got a big contract, though, so he still got that big contract.
And he still has that big contract.
Dude, like,
so
Michigan can't outpace Stanford. And, like, Ann Arbor is not a better place to live than Palo Alto. Come on.
So you think
Palo Alto is pretty nice.
Have you ever lived there?
No.
There you go.
So, I mean, so you make it sound like this would be a no-brainer to leave for him to leave Stanford to come to Michigan.
So my opinion on the two towns. Well, no, I mean, I think a lot of people who live here and have kind of never lived in California are like, oh, that must be great.
Does Palo Alto have a red light district?
Probably once upon a time. I don't know. I love this town, man. I don't know why anyone wouldn't want to move here once they see what's going on here. But
same contract. I don't know if you know any Shannon Turley or know.
I mean, I know of his work. I mean, I know he's the kind of guy.
So I mean, I guess I'm just curious. So if they were to come with the same package, or you wouldn't come with the same package. Let's say they came with a little more.
Yeah.
You think it'd be a no-brainer for him to say?
I mean, I think it depends on what kind of guy he is.
If it was a no-brainer, he'd already be here.
But right. They came with a big. They obviously gave him a huge deal.
Yeah, but like, they'll just do it again. Yeah, How much money does Stanford have? A lot of money.
That is true.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
They have a lot of money.
I mean, what? I mean, we don't know what exactly Stanford pays their coaches.
Yeah.
But I bet. What Michigan pays their set of coaches is at least double.
Well, I mean, maybe he's like some people just like Palo Alto.
Look, if Shannon Turley's the kind of guy that's worried about how he's going to melt his snow in his driveway, you know, like what? I've heard these crazy stories of, you know, the guy, people in Ann Arbor sold their house to someone in California, and then they get a phone call a couple of days later. What happens when it snows? And they're just like, oh man, they're going to back out of this deal. So, you know, if he's one of those guys, then clearly he's not coming.
Uh-huh.
But I haven't said, and look, I don't want to make it
somewhere in between.
Yeah, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, they are making a run for Shannon Turley. I'm just saying that was the top. That was the guy that Jim went after when he got here.
Right.
That's the guy that he wanted.
And the other thing about Turley is like he's the guy that will write NFL teams a letter like, my guy can't do that many bench presses at 225 because I trained him to do football activities, not combine activities. So, so definitely, you know, what Brian was saying about every strength and conditioning coach has his own ideals. Like he has his own ideals in that regard, right? Like he wants to make you football strong, not combine strong.
All right, so guys, let's switch gears a bit, get into some Michigan basketball. So is Michigan playing defense?
According to KenPom, they are.
They must be. I don't know how.
I know how. So when you are kind of an offensive player and you can hit a high rate of threes, you know, you play defense, but maybe not at the intensity with other people that aren't as good at scoring the ball. You know, like you kind of have to play defense. I mean, this team is not as explosive offensively as we've seen other B-line teams. So how are you going to win games?
Well, you know, I don't know.
You play
it,
more.
I think a lot of it comes down to like Texas being Texas, like.
But you, I mean,
Shaka is a bloom coming off the rose there a little bit.
I didn't think they did him any favors with those drop ins.
No,
they were
terrible.
He sounded terrible. It's like, oh my! I mean,
just go out there and play basketball.
I was like, man, do some sort of drop in where he actually gives some basketball instruction.
Seriously,
it was bad.
That's
man.
Like Ron Zook, the basketball coach.
No, Steve Lavin. Remember Steve Lavin from UCLA? He was the worst at those interviews.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that felt that way because it's like, oh, this is horrid.
Yeah.
They're making him look bad right now.
I don't know if that's like we don't want to give away any like secrets, but if his secrets are like, okay, we need to like not take threes, that's better than go out there and just play basketball, which is like we know what we're involved in. We see the ball. It's a basketball. It's not a highlight object.
Bad. Yeah, I mean, Peloton. Texas was, what, like a 5-point favorite?
What's the highlight ball called?
What?
Do you know what the highlight ball is called?
No.
Well, typical.
I mean, Texas had looked good up into that season, regardless of what their record said. I mean, I think they were top 10 in defensive efficiency.
Well, and they were missing their only outside shooter. So right.
They kept taking outside shots, which I
could
not
get. But they also missed a bunch of layups that I think
that they did.
Well, a lot of those were fairly contested. Like.
True, but, I mean, a lot of them were point blank, too, right? That... I mean, I don't think
Craig wants to say
game.
Something. He's muttering.
Now Craig should talk.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a couple of things. One is it's interesting to note that High Lie is the only game where it's illegal to play left-handed. And I don't, and it's played in something called a fronton.
Yeah.
But I don't know, but I don't know what the ball is, what the ball is called. But, you know, Michigan, you know, the one thing, there was a lot of noise about UCLA, excuse me, Texas missing their best shooter, and that's true. But Texas went to overtime against, Gonzaga and against, was it Duke? Yeah, Gonzaga and Duke, and they lost in overtime in both those games. They're two losses. And in those games, they were 10 of 45 from three. So they were only shooting 22.5% in games they went to overtime against Duke and Gonzaga. And the reason for this is that Texas is a really, really, really good defensive team. And partly that's because of Mo Bamba. What they do with Mo Bamba is sui generis. It's very unique. And he, it's, he, what they do is they sort of soft or hard hedge him on all our center screens. And he's then able to read the original defender. He is help defender. And sometimes he'll hedge hard and switch. And sometimes he'll lay back and then just cover the middle and block the ball as the ball carrier thinks he's got an angle. And they're very, very good at that. They're very good defensively in general. And so it's one of the reasons why Michigan in that game looks so terrible defensively. I mean, offensively. On the other hand, Michigan is not a good offensive team. They don't shoot the ball well. They don't shoot from the free throw line. I said this last week. We're not shooting threes, or, you know. And so we're going to have to win these games in ways we haven't in the past. And they are. And that's, I'm playing defense and by rebounding on the defensive end. And by the beeline traditional methodology, which is don't turn the ball over.
Yeah.
And so we're getting more shots than the teams we play almost routinely. Sometimes we're getting a lot more shots. We're sitting at, I think, 33rd in KenPom, as someone said, on defensive efficiency. We're 33rd in defensive rebounding. So Michigan, and part of that is because of Simpson, who's a good defender. Part of it is because of Matthews, who's a great defender. So the whole sort of construct of Michigan basketball, in my mind, has changed from a team that shoots a lot of threes. We still shoot a lot of threes and plays really sort of elegant offense, to a team that is not so good at shooting the ball but is playing defense. And this even exacerbates when Teske's in the lineup, because he's a nice Obama, but he's one hell of a good defender. And so it's a new day, and I think Michigan has a real shot at making the NCAAs at this point.
So 33rd defensive efficiency out of 350 whatever teams is better than the team that made it to the national championship game did over the course of the season.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's correct.
To put it in perspective.
You know, they you mentioned that they shoot a lot of threes, and this was what was interesting to me. This was a contest where 3-point shot wasn't a major staple for them. They took 19. I think they made 6. I don't have the stats. Yes, I do have the stats in front of me. Someone printed them out. Michigan was 6 for 19 from 3 in this game. But you look at what Texas wants to do and what they weren't able to do in this game. I mean, Michigan made this a half-court game. Texas clearly struggles in the half-court. They obviously are going to struggle more in the half-court without Jones in there. But they want to run, and they couldn't. They obviously couldn't set their pressure because they couldn't make shots. So Michigan, not only did they make it a half-court game, they rebounded well. I thought that they were going to get killed on the offensive glass, and they didn't.
No, at one point they were up 10-3 in offensive rebounds, which is mind-blowing. Like that, I mean, that's the reason that this was a comfortable win, is that they were plus 7 at that point instead of minus 7, which is what I think you would expect going into this game. But, you know, Wagner's made a real leap as a rebounder. I think Marr did a lot of work on the defensive boards in this game.
He did.
You're seeing a renewed emphasis on that. And, I mean, Michigan, the thing about that is, so when you can shut down the opposition's transition and you can out-rebound them on the offensive glass, I mean, that is an amazing combination. And usually Michigan just goes with the former, and they're like, all right, we're not going to offensive rebound at all.
Right.
But we're going to take you out of your transition.
All right.
Yeah, and down the stretch, I really like the block shot that Teske got. I mean, that's why he's in the game there. And Simpson did a really good job handling the ball, I thought, closing out that game too, which are two things that this team could really use.
Right, and you look at, to your point, Brian, when you talk about just the change – look at who got the offensive rebounds. That tells you about the emphasis that's being placed on it, because Abdur-Rahman led them with 4 offensive rebounds, and then Charles Matthews had 3. I mean,
Matthews is the best offensive rebounder Michigan's had since Brent Petway. Like, he has a real knack for it, and he's obviously got the athleticism to go get it. And, like, Glenn Robinson would occasionally, swoop in. You saw DJ do it a little bit last year, but that was always occasional. And, you can probably pencil in 4 to 6 points on putbacks for Matthews before the game even starts.
Yeah, but Michigan, John Beilein, he's having his guys get back. Yeah, right. And to see this, it tells you, hey, man, he's turning them loose a little bit more and getting more aggressive. Even on the glass as well. So, maybe that's another sign of change for this team.
The Rahman thing was probably a long rebound off a missed 3 fluke, but Matthews is a legit guy.
He had 4 of them.
I know. A couple of them were those long rebounds off missed 3s, so...
But isn't that kind of the fun of watching John Beilein teams is watching him adapt to his talent and kind of figuring it out as the season goes along?
No.
No. What do you mean no?
No.
Watching them get better as the year goes on?
No. The fun of watching a John Beilein team is watching the talent adapt to John Beilein. And it's just like, okay, we're halfway through the season now, and now we're really good at being a John Beilein team. Like, he doesn't change. I mean, he changed a little bit, but, obviously there's a renewed emphasis on the defense, but his offense is his offense, man.
You don't think his offense has changed?
Well, since they went to the ball screen stuff, there was kind of a big change once he got to Michigan and had to.
Well, I mean, I got to think their post touches are more now than they were.
That is true.
Well, yeah, because they never put the ball in the post literally ever.
Ever, right? When J-Bo was.
But still, it happens every once in a while, but it's not yeah, really.
Put it this way, he's counting the post. How many post touches we had in the last game, and we weren't effective. So it's a part of the game plan now. But obviously,
that's because their offense sucks.
If they don't execute, the message I take from that is
they don't have any better ideas than give it to Wagner because they don't have a point.
But I mean, the guy has an array of moves down there.
He does. But if Derek Walton's on this team, this isn't happening. Like, they're not dumping it in the post with Derek Walton on the floor. This doesn't happen.
I don't know about that.
I mean, every once in a while, sure, just as a changeup, but as we need a bucket, we're just going to throw it in the post. John Beilein hates that. We'll never do it, but he's got no choice this year.
It is 9:47 on a Thursday. We got one more break on the show. If you want to get in, still time. It's 734-998-1050. We got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, the ticket. 9:53 on a Thursday morning here on the Michigan Insider Show. Guys, all right, we are at the point now with point guard play over the last couple of games where I wonder if the pendulum has swung a little bit. They've been starting Eli Brooks, finishing with Xavier Simpson. I tell you what, Xavier Simpson has been playing much better basketball lately. Much better basketball relative to him. I mean, driving to the lane and finishing. Man. He's always done it on the defensive end of the floor. But offensively, attacking the rim, ball not sticking with him as much, not passing late. Beilein, he made it very clear. He said, man, a lot of times we'd be in offense and he would see the play or see the pass 2 seconds too late. So, man, by the time you're ready to make the pass, the play's over. So it seems to be less of that. I'm wondering if you guys are feeling like this thing is starting to trend more towards more Xavier Simpson.
Maybe. I mean, Brooks had a couple of really nice plays late in the UCLA game where, they have a pick and pop with Wagner, and then the next time down the floor, he just takes it right to the bucket. So I think he's still making his name known, and he should get better faster because he's younger. Mm-hmm. So,
Better shooter.
Better shooter. I mean, Simpson has actually made him at a good clip this year, but he's one of those guys who can't really get a shot unless he's absolutely wide open. Still major improvement from last year. Interested to see where this goes. But given the way that, how hard it is to play point guard for Beilein as a freshman or a transfer, as Jaron Simmons is discovering.
Man.
Yeah.
I mean, but you got the freshman that is getting – he's not only is he getting minutes over Jaron Simmons, he's starting.
Yeah, so I kind of feel like he's probably still the long-term future there. And Simpson's made himself a valuable piece now, but I think if you made me bet who the starting point guard was next year, I'd still say Brooks.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that Brooks is starting. You know, he looks like a freshman out there to me. Simpson has looked better. Particularly, like I said, that ball handling towards the end of the game is something that I think they'll need. I mean, it could be, you know, a game situation kind of thing.
Or it could be just what we've seen. One starts, one finishes.
Well, I mean, maybe you're playing Texas and they're desperate and they're pressing, and that's I'd like Simpson out there at that point too, because you want to play defense, you don't want to turn the ball over, and he's a better ball handler than Brooks right now.
Well, and then Brooks played more when they were down against UCLA in the second half, right? If I remember right.
I mean, Simpson came on very late and played well through overtime.
Yes, he did.
But Brooks was there for a big chunk of that comeback, so it's, you know, six and one, half dozen of the other.
Craig.
I'm with Sam on this. I think that this is going to be something that continues to go along as it goes along, and Beilein may ride in any individual game who's playing better between the two of them. I disagree with Brian about Brooks at point guard. I think his long-term future is more likely at the two. I think he's a good enough ball handler to play the point, but I think he's more suited to the two.
You think he's a good enough shooter?
Yeah, I do. I think eventually, I think next year you're going to see the fight between David DeJulius and Simpson at the point. We'll see how that plays out. I think you'll see a fight at the two with Poole and Brooks. You know, you may find this odd, but right now Simpson's shooting 41% from three.
Yeah, Brian he said he was making him at a good clip.
Yeah, and
he's wide open Brooks, on a lot of those too.
That's still an accomplishment, though. That's an accomplishment, though.
Make him check you, yeah.
Yeah, and Brooks is shooting 31%. So, although he shot a few more. And so, you know, right now it isn't, that one just isn't clear to me. I have two thoughts on basketball that we haven't touched on. One is maybe just my worry nature, but I saw in a couple of recent drafts, list that Mo was sitting at number 68 to 75 on draft boards. Does this pose? I mean, he has improved this year, and maybe that'll change. He's improved as a defender. I mean, and more as a rebounder. But I wonder if Michigan has some awkwardness vis-a-vis next year if Mo says, "Hey, I think I need one more year."
No,
is that a problem? Arms, right? I mean.
That would be great.
I think
at somebody
we have too many scholarships, huh?
Well,
figure it out.
It'll work.
Something will happen.
And the 70th prospect for this upcoming draft does not seem in the right ballpark for Mo Wagner.
Well, when he put his name in the draft and he goes to the combine and then he measures it like a negative 2.5 wingspan relative to his height.
Yeah.
Like, there are some structural deficiencies in his body that make him not a great NBA prospect.
I know. This is the wonders of being in 2017, where your wingspan is seriously going to get you docked in
the draft.
Well,
look at
I know it's not you, Brian.
Look at Mo Bamba versus Wagner. Like, when you have arms like that, they will move heaven and earth to draft you in the top five because it's impossible to get the ball around you. And Wagner just doesn't provide that presence.
Yeah, but he can shoot.
And, but if he can continue to show that he can rebound, but show that he has legit back to the basket skills to go with the face up skills that they know he has. They know he can shoot the three. They knew he could put it on the floor a little bit. That he is more than a rudimentary post player. I think that I agree that 60s, there's no way he would be there in the 60s. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Still seems like a second-round pick to me.
We'll see. It's I actually have a bet on that with someone. So he has to be a first-round pick for me to win this bet.
I'm with you, Sam.
We'll see how it goes. Man. That does it for us here on the Michigan Insider. Thanks for another great MGO Blog Roundtable.
got it better than us!